some young guy would start a singing, he would have arpeggios, and he'd be so good technically, you know. And everybody would play and play and play. And I would try to enjoy it, and after a while I'd think, oh man, how long is this one going to last? And then the harmonium would be passed to the next guy, and it would be some old man with no teeth and a cap on the back of his head, a workman, a laborer, maybe a carrier or something like that. And he would start to sing, and his voice was cracked, and he was off key, and the thing was so sweet and so pure and so in the spirit that when it was over, nobody could move. And I had to cut through all my models of what music, Western, what about music, in order to listen to this, which was, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was God, the Word was with God. Because that's the Spirit. All I can share with you at this moment, all we can ever share with one another, is our own being. That's why the model of all these words, these are just dances. I'm painting with words because I'm not a good enough musician to just do it with sound or do with paints. But all we ever share with each other is our own level of vibration. We are actually just vibrating with one another. His vibes are good, we say. That's what a contact high is. Somebody takes you into another vibrational space. He brought me down means I went into a place and I got caught in his vibrational net. Did you ever see the Doctor Strange comics? Doctor Strange meets the Mystic Mind. And Doctor Strange puts out a huge net to catch the Mystic Mind. Just like a fish net coming out of his head. That's what we all have. Somebody comes up and says, oh, I'm suffering so. There's the net. You gonna climb in? You poor thing. Or, wow, it's a tough incarnation, isn't it? I'm a mother. Great, well, we're all here. I'm a man. You want to go beyond that one too? Yin and Yang is a great plane. You can really hang out there for a long time. I'll be Yin, you be Yang. What do you say? I'll be Yang, you be Yin. Who do you want to be this time? The baby is waking up, and had we faith enough, we could live in that inner place where we know who we are, and all else on this plane would follow, but most of us don't have enough faith. See, because if you lived as that baby, you wouldn't sit around thinking. But have you enough faith to stop thinking? That's a really interesting one. Do you have enough faith to stop thinking? Do you think that if you didn't think about later, it would all be chaos? You see what the ego does? It has this rational mind saying, man, you need me. You need me. You don't think, baby, you end up in the loony bin. You end up a vegetable. You want that? How about that one? 20 years ago, I've got a lot of heavy karma. 20 years ago, I used to do lobotomy research. I didn't give lobotomies, but I used to measure people before and after lobotomies. And after you cut off most of the response mechanism of the brain, you get a guy who was before a very agitated guy, and he's sitting there like this. And you feed him, and you take care of him, and he sits there all day. And you say, isn't that too bad? That's a scary one. It's a scary one. Because all you've really done by ablating the brain is you cut off the response mechanism. The thinking mind is a reaction. Your consciousness is something else entirely. Brain waves related to meditation, all response mechanisms. All response mechanisms. The little baby isn't measured by electroencephalography. And the little baby doesn't think because it already knows, and it isn't of so little faith that it has to know it knows. That is the hype that we are caught in. How do you know? I know I know. Science knows it knows. You know? Of course I know. Look at this. Probabilistically, we can say, you saw it, I saw it, we must know. The far-out thing is that no matter how much knowledge you collect through your senses and through your rational mind, it is asymptotic. It will never get you to the place. Because the laws of the universe are not knowable by the rational mind, but they're almost knowable by the rational mind. That's really seductive. That is the seduction that has kept many, many great philosophers hooked on being great philosophers. I know, I know it. I almost know it all. It gets exquisitely subtle. It's not gross ego like, I know. No, they're all done with the astral planes of personality of, I've got to know because it'll make me feel good. That isn't it. It's just that they are so, their mind is blown by, but not far enough. See, their mind is blown by that they're going to know they know. People like Huxley and Heard and on and on and on. People who stayed right at the highest place in the causal plane, knowing they knew. That's the same thing as in orgasm, not quite letting go into the orgasm because you'll give up the fun of experiencing the orgasm. See the place? There are two places. One is where you are the orgasm, and the other is where you stand back a little and say, wow, isn't this orgasm a gas? But in order to be the orgasm, you've got to give up being the guy who stands back and says, wow, isn't this groovy? But the ego keeps saying, man, if you don't know you know, it's going to be terrible. Terrible. See, there is a new phenomenon appearing now that's quite extraordinary. We are so used to what we measure as intellectuals and what we even measure on IQ tests is we measure how much a person knows he knows. And everybody sits around showing each other how much they know in universities. You know what I know? You know that? I'll tell you, then you'll know you know. Then we'll both know we know. And then it'll be enough. And then you can... Now what is appearing is a young being, sometimes around 12 or 13 years old, whose mind is absolutely empty. Pretty scary what's happened to our culture. But when you're around this person, you suddenly sense you are in the presence of great wisdom. Because there is an interesting distinction between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is the thing that allows you to make a fist without, you can't necessarily say how you make a fist. You can make a fist because it's all part of you, it's just natural. Once you get over the anxiety, the fear that you're not going to know enough, you can start to be wisdom. See, it's just for example, for many of you, is the way in which you drive a car. Drive along, total base brain operation. Complex responses with a pedal and with a clutch and with a brake, and you're looking through the rear mirror for whatever might be around. And at the same moment, you may be talking to somebody or playing the radio or reading a book or who knows what. Smoking a joint, who knows? You know, you're doing thousands of things. Maybe making love, I don't know. And you're doing this complex thing with an automobile without any attention to it at all. It's just all happening. Now you say, yeah, but I had to know I knew to bring... But did you ever meet those kind of people? You only got to have met one to see how it works. That is so open, so tuned in, that he comes to a new task and he does it just like that. Flip, flip, flip. He just hears what has to be done. He feels his way into the project. He doesn't do it with his thinking mind. The worst drivers are the ones that think about it. I better get in the left lane. Am I driving too fast? He's getting too close. Those are the ones the insurance companies don't want to insure. The thinking driver. Predicament, very simple. We have been born again and we do not have sufficient faith to trust what has happened to us. And so we are imposing all the old models about how it has to be for it to be all right. And all those models are in effect keeping it from happening. That's the way it is. That's what purification is all about. Purification is getting free of all the models that are keeping you down. They are all the models that are keeping you from being here and now all the time. Because every thought you think is 1 millisecond at least away from the here and now. I look at you and then I think man. Now in order to think man, something had to happen. The stimulus comes in, I've got to go through a whole computer program to conceptualize, to take that shape, form, cues about hair and eyes and nose and beard, and it's very complex. And then I come up with man and then I say, well, I guess I know what that one is. Now let's try this one. Don't you see that everything that our Western education has been based on has been profane? It has been based on the model that you are somebody who, in order to make it happen, has got to be associating rapidly and conceptualizing and knowing you know. Otherwise, man, you're not going to know to come in out of the rain or zip up your fly. Isn't that the way it is? Think faster, faster, faster. More associations, better jobs, more associations. Isn't that the way it works? We'll have new creativity training for young children. We'll teach them at 2 years old to have low probability associative responses by giving rewards for kooky ideas. And then we're going to end up with people who are associating. They're going to be completely out of control associators. People like Herman Kahn. Just keep associating. They're just like huge associative machines. That's what we produce, this thing. But then along comes Einstein's, you know, with those big soft eyes, and he says, you know, the way I touched on those fundamental laws was not through my rational mind. Boy, that really knocks a hole in the whole analytic trip, doesn't it? I mean, you build with all the analytic blocks and it doesn't add up to what you were looking for. The rational mind the huge cerebral cortex, the frontal lobe, this is the great siddhi, the great power, this power we are enjoying at this moment. It is the power that was given to man, which would allow him to become conscious of his own predicament, which would allow him to become liberated from the illusion. Okay? That's why it was given to us. But the funny thing about it is, just like every other siddhi or power, you can use it to stay in the illusion. You can either use it to stay in the illusion or get out of the illusion. But the super funny thing about that, the cosmic joke is, if you use it to stay in the illusion long enough, it takes you out of the illusion. I mean, you dig that if you make a machine that'll take man out far enough so that he can take a picture of the Earth so he sees the Earth's just a big round thing as a village, nationalism goes to hell, sooner or later. He uses the rational mind to get more and more through television until finally a 12-year-old kid has already vicariously lived out hundreds of adult roles. He's used up. He's experiencing virag, or the unfinished with worldliness at 12 years old. He doesn't any longer have to spend the next 50 years becoming a crook for the CIA. Because he's already lived it out. Because technology allowed him to do it, you know, and do it vicariously at 12. And then he can flip the dial and become the leading criminal lawyer of Texas. Then he can flip the dial again and become, you know, J. Edgar Hoover. He can be the good guys and the bad guys, and the old guys and the young guys, the beautiful guys, the rich guys. He's used it up. All of our greed to have it, we got it, and then when you got it, then you used it up, and then you're ready for the next trip, which turns out to be inward. So in that case, the rational mind, the power which we misuse totally, you couldn't misuse, it turns out. You can't misuse it. And that's why we in this country at this moment are in the most exquisite predicament. Believe me, in India, you know, the horror is that people are trying to buy sunglasses, Coca-Cola, and brownie cameras by increasing millions every day. They are just going under. It's like a huge serpent. You want to go to India? Get there quick, I'll tell you, because pretty soon the cities in India are often very much like, well, Indian Parliament is often like an education conference in the 1930s. Because right here is where literally millions, millions of people have seen the sign at the bottom of the stairs. And the sign says, this exit is closed. This is not the way out. Turn around and go the other way. Go in, don't go out. Go up, don't go down. Whichever way, go up, down, up. You know, it doesn't matter. It's all over determined that we're in this position at this moment. You didn't have to say and think, shall I become enlightened? I think I'll become enlightened. There is no choice. You ready? There are no choices. There are no accidents. None, not even any possible in nature. Nature is perfectly lawful. But you aren't in nature, but you don't know that. When you are free of the total identification with nature, then you have total free choice. Then you are given all of the powers of God. Had ye but faith, you can move mountains. You can remake the universe. But you're not going to be handed your flying license until you're not going to crack up the airplane. And the problem is that Sam Brown would crack up the airplane. Sam Brown as God doesn't make it. I mean, I know it all, I'm God. Now what I'll do? I'll move that mountain from... I mean, we've just been given a little siddhi, the rational mind, and look at what we've been doing with it. Look at what we've been doing with it. We've created machines that we contaminate the air with. We're practically wiping ourselves off the planet. All with our rational minds, you dig that. I mean, all the hands and machines are just extensions of our heads. That's only a little power. How about the one where you can move into somebody else's head and become their thoughts? What are you going to do with that one? Mr. Hoover. Well, we'll have to have that connected with the government, and we'll have to find anybody that moves into anybody else's head. I mean, if you're going to go on the paranoid trip about powers, it's all going to get very scary. Very scary. At the same time that I'm doing this series of three evenings once a week, like next week and the week after here, I'm doing the same three series, or not the same, but I'm doing a three series in Los Angeles at the Unitarian Church there. And it's presented me with a very interesting, and I find it extremely fascinating to reflect on this, what's this called, this Manson case. Because this is apparently an example of the use of siddhis, the misuse of siddhis. Because along the way in this work, there are powers you develop, and if there is a big ego, you want to use the powers, and you may want to use them for good. See, those are the really scary people. I'm doing good. Manson was supposedly using as his Bible Heinlein, Stranger in a Strange Land, and all he was doing was leading people to discorporate other beings. Rasputin was an example of somebody with great powers and a big ego. If you would like a historical example. But an interesting process happens for almost everybody on this journey. Is that as you break your attachments, as you break your attachments to your desires, to your models of the universe, the rule of the game is you hear more and more of how it is. And as you hear more and more of how it is, you become less and less able to perform acts which are out of harmony with the universe, that is, acts which would further isolate or separate the elements of the unity. That is, that as you break your attachment, you start to live at a new plane of consciousness, and then all of your acts will be in the harmony that is obvious from this other level of consciousness. That's the way it works. Somebody says, "What should I do?" I say, "Sit down and center enough until you hear how it is, and then you will do what has to be done." New energy source. You have a groovy life. You've got it all made, but it's not enough. The guy we were talking about earlier in the day. What are you going to do about it? Nothing to do about it. Just sit down, center. And when you have gone in far enough, you will start to be, and then what is to be done will be obvious. As long as you think there is a doer, as long as you are identified with he who is doing whatever you're doing, going to school, listening to a lecture, smoking pot, making love, eating, sleeping, going to the toilet, anything, as long as you are identified with that being, forget it. That's the identification that has to be broken. Ralph Waldo Emerson. A man is the facade of a temple wherein all wisdom and all good abide. What we commonly call man, the eating, drinking, counting, planting man, does not, as we know him, represent himself, but misrepresents himself. If you're going to listen to the sound, the inner sound, the word of God, the sound of the universe, the shabda, the nod, the inner sounds, you've got to be really, really quiet. What does quiet mean? It doesn't mean shh. It means you've got to stop thinking so much. Because as long as out of your anxiety about knowing you know, you have to keep rehearsing your model of the universe over and over again. Man, woman, 10 o'clock, tired, quote, what am I going to say next? I don't think at all up here. It may be obvious to you by now. When I just sit here, it's just empty. It's very far out. It used to scare me. When I first started teaching at Stanford and then at Harvard, I'd spent hours preparing my lectures, and I'd have them all written out in long lists. you know, long quotes and sentences. And I was so panicked, man, if I walk 2 feet from the lectern, I get an anxiety attack. I might not have anything to say for a second. Now what I have is a book of groovy quotes. And I come in and I just empty my mind. And if I do it well enough, I pick up on all the vibrations around. And then we are talking to ourselves. And what's so far out is every time I speak in a different place, a different thing comes out. Because who we are is different.